If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
According to Axios, President Trump is adding an 11th rally ahead of the upcoming midterms that will take place in Missouri. When asked if she was going with them, Melania said, "I am already in Missouri."
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to comedian, actor, and writer Chris Gethard. Plus, Chris takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
After a week of horrific attacks, President Trump is once again attacking the media while his allies blame both sides for violent rhetoric. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. In moments of crisis like this, it is clear that Trump is not only incapable of providing the moral leadership expected of a president, he's just incapable of being human. I mean, look at him. The guy doesn't even know how to close an umbrella. And then when he can't close it, he just leaves it there. Trump's the kind of rich ass who, when his car runs out of gas, just leaves it on the side of the road.
"It's me, the Bentley's broken. No, it's broken again."
Before Trump put the umbrella down, he spent 10 minutes just yelling at it, "Umbrella, close. Siri, close umbrella. Alexa, fire Siri." In fact, Trump is so incapable of mustering even the basic level of empathy that after the horrific anti-Semitic attack at a synagogue in Pittsburgh on Saturday, he decided to keep all of his political events. And in one event, he told the crowd he had considered canceling, not because of the attack, but because his hair was wet.
"Somebody just said, 'Your hair looks different today.' I said, 'Well, I was standing under the wing of Air Force One doing a news conference early this morning, a very unfortunate news conference. And the wind was blowing and the rain, and I was soaking wet. And that's what I ended up with today.' And I said, 'Well, at least you know it's mine.' And I said, 'Maybe I should cancel this arrangement because I have a bad hair day.'"
Oh, your hair got wet. Well, next time, just use an umbrella. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's on me. That's my fault. Trump also refused to cancel his campaign rally on Saturday, and to justify that choice, he claimed that the New York Stock Exchange reopened the day after 9/11.
"With what happened early today, that horrible, horrible attack in Pittsburgh, I was saying maybe I should cancel both this and that. And then I said to myself, I remember Dick Grasso, a friend of mine, great guy, he headed up the New York Stock Exchange on September 11th, and the New York Stock Exchange was open the following day. He said, and what they had to do to open it, you wouldn't believe."
That's right. You wouldn't believe it. And you shouldn't, because it didn't happen. The stock exchange remained closed for 6 days after the terrorist attack. These are his most infuriating lies, the ones we can just check by typing them into Google, the ones his supporters will never check. At this point, if you type "Is Trump lying?" into Google, you'll just get a page that says, "Too many results, try Bing." Trump Trump just lies freely. He imbibes conspiracy theories from media outlets like Fox News, and then he spews them to his supporters. For example, after mail bombs were sent to a dozen targets of Trump's rhetoric, including leading Democrats and CNN, prominent conservatives on Twitter and Fox News began floating the theory that the bombs were a so-called false flag meant to help Democrats in the midterms.
Fox Business Network host Lou Dobbs sent out this tweet writing, "Fake news, fake bombs. Who could possibly benefit by so much fakery?"
We have the worst right-wing bomb maker in history, or we have a false flag operation.
The fact that these bombs have not gone off is a great indication that I feel these are false flag bombings.
At the risk of sounding like a far right-wing lunatic, I have to say that I believe that this whole thing was an elaborate hoax.
Of course, the other one is that false flag. And there could be someone in there, some Democrat, that, you know, low-level person. I'm not suggesting anyone on the top, but who just decided, you know what, I'm going to put this out because 2 weeks before a major election, who's going to be look like the bad guy here? The Republicans.
Fascinating.
No. It's not fascinating. It's dangerous. Someone just floated an insane conspiracy theory on a channel watched by millions of people, and you're reacting like Spock after a transporter malfunction.
Fascinating.
Now, Geraldo Rivera, who claimed the bomb's a hoax, did take it back after an arrest was made, tweeting, "Never mind, outsmarted myself in conjuring false flag operation designed to hurt Donald Trump and GOP." That's how dumb Geraldo is. He got outsmarted by Geraldo. And then there's Lou Dobbs, the Fox Business host, who tweeted, "Fake news, fake bombs." Dobbs might be the most unhinged conspiracy theorist on Fox, which is saying a lot, given that Fox also employs this guy. Sean Hannity is what you get if you gave Frankenstein the brain of Alex Jones. But somehow, Dobbs has managed to out-crazy him. And not only is the president one of Dobbs' most loyal viewers, he actually includes Dobbs in major decisions. Earlier this year, it was reported that Dobbs had been patched into senior-level meetings that featured officials such as senior policy advisor Stephen Miller and former chief strategist Steve Bannon. Man, it is not easy to be the craziest person in a meeting with Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller. Although, in fairness to Dobbs, when the meeting started, it was just supposed to be Bannon, but then Miller burst out of his chest. So Dobbs... So Dobbs was one of many prominent conservatives on TV and social media, spreading baseless conspiracy theories. And even before the suspect was identified, he was on TV blaming Democrats for violence against Republicans. Although watch as he tries to get through this segment, has trouble reading, and just gives up.
Be sure to vote in our poll tonight. Do you believe it's time for Democratic leaders to denounce acts of violence against Republicans as President Trump targeted Democrats? Cast your vote on Twitter at Lou Dobbs.
Oh, my goodness. Sounds like Grandpa took too much Lunesta. Grandpa, the bottle's empty! So this is what the president is consuming all day and then turning around and spewing to his audience. In fact, just hours before an arrest was made in the bombings on Friday, Trump went on Twitter to again attack CNN, which just days earlier had been the target of a mail bomb.
Funny how lowly rated CNN and others can criticize me at will, even blaming me for the current spate of bombs and ridiculously comparing this to September 11th and the Oklahoma City bombing. Yet when I criticize them, they go wild and scream, "It's just not presidential."
That's because it's their job to cover you. Your job is to be president. They're two different jobs. You're like a guy who goes in for a checkup and says, "Funny how the doctor can check my prostate, but if I try to check his, I get arrested." But somehow, that wasn't even the most disconcerting thing about that tweet. It's that Trump tweeted it at 3:14 a.m. Why is the president of the United States up at 3 in the morning tweeting insults about a news network? Is he having trouble sleeping? Maybe you should try taking whatever medication Lou Dobbs is on. So right-wing pundits, Fox News, and the president himself spent days floating the theory that the bombs were a false flag. But then, when an arrest was actually made, it turned out the only flag the suspect was waving was a MAGA flag.
The person arrested today in Plantation, Florida, is Cesar Sayoc, 56 years old.
His Twitter feed showing him driving to Trump rallies, hosting crowd chants, attacking CNN, cheering the president on in this selfie video. another recorded as the president spoke.
This morning, the FBI seized this white van owned by Sayoc that was covered with pro-Trump stickers.
This is his van. It is plastered with photos of President Trump and Vice President Pence. It shows pictures of former President Obama and Hillary Clinton, and it includes a sticker that is critical of CNN.
Man, I didn't think it was possible to make a white van even creepier, but he did it. And yet, even after we found out that the suspect was a Trump fan, the president and his allies blamed the recent spate of violence on both sides.
Everyone has their own style. And frankly, people on both sides of the aisle use strong language about our political differences.
America is polarized, no doubt about it. I mean, people are dug in on both sides.
Angry obsessives are dangerous, and they're on both fringes.
I would love to see the stuff dial back on both sides.
It's not both sides. Only one side is repeating deranged conspiracy theories, accusing Democrats of orchestrating an immigrant invasion, calling the press the enemy of the people, and encouraging violence. Trump literally reenacted a body slam against a reporter at one of his rallies. Bernie Sanders paused one of his rallies when a bird landed on his podium.
Now, you see, this little bird doesn't know it.
If that bird had landed on Trump's podium, it would have ended up in a bucket. Also, can I just ask, why is Anthony Scaramucci still on TV? If you're an ex-Trump aide, you shouldn't get more time commenting on the White House than you had working inside the White House. Scaramucci should have been on TV for 9 days max and then gone back to what he was doing before, parking BMWs at Caesar's Palace. There's no use in waiting for moral leadership from a president who is so obviously unwilling to provide it. The only option is to vote for people who will. And maybe while we're at it, we could elect some people who know how to use an umbrella. This has been A Closer Look.
Our guest is a very funny comedian, actor, and writer. His new book, Lose Well, is available now. Please welcome back to the show our friend Chris Gethard, everyone. How are you?
I'm going to be honest and say I'm not good.
Okay.
I'm feeling insecure. Yesterday, this is very true, I had like an hour to kill. I've been out promoting my book. I had an hour to kill in between things. And I walked past a barbershop. And I said, you know what? I'm going on TV tomorrow. Seth Show. I want to get the sides and the back cleaned up. I go in. This guy starts going hard. And I'm not exaggerating at all. This happened to me yesterday. He stops halfway through. He turns off the clippers and he goes, I want you to know I am not a barber. And I started laughing because that's a really funny thing for a barber to say.
Yeah.
And then I'm quoting him when he said, no, I'm not kidding. I don't know what the I'm doing. But we were halfway done. So I think I have a terrible haircut right now, and I feel very insecure about it, and I'm sorry.
Have you put any thought, or did you ask any follow-ups about how that ends up happening, that a man who's not a barber?
He had a whole scheme. He was trying to make money off the idea of having... It was very weird.
Wow.
I'm not lying. When we were done, I didn't say a word, and he looked at me in the mirror, and before I could say anything, his response, he goes, that's not that bad. That was his review of his haircut. The whole thing was messed up. And I feel like a real goon.
Congratulations on the book, by
Thank
the way.
You.
And just let's take a look at the book again to see what Chris's hair is supposed to look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that's much better.
This book is very funny, but there's also an element of self-help to it. Mm-hmm. I know that's something that you have taken very seriously in your work, and you made sure your audience feels very open to talk to you about things like that. With that said, where do you see this book in bookstores? Is this in the humor section?
It's a great question. I think even the bookstores are having trouble figuring it out. The day it came out, I went to the Barnes & Noble in Union Square, the big one, because my mom, I wanted to take a picture of it on the shelf and send it to my mom. I'm not so egocentric that I need to see it. It was from my mom. And I went and looked in the humor section, and it wasn't there. So I said, oh, that's weird. It's in self-help. I got to get used to this. But it wasn't there either. So then I went up to the manager, and I said, this is embarrassing, but I'm an author. My book's out today. Can you tell me where it is? And he types in the computer, and he goes, oh, it looks like we bought 9 copies. They're in a box somewhere. I hope the box isn't in the basement. So I guess you can find it in the basement of your local bookstore.
I feel like I wouldn't be surprised if that guy said, also, I need you to know, I'm not a bookstore manager.
I'm actually a barber.
I'm a barber.
I'm actually a barber. But me and this bookstore guy, we're in the middle of this crazy 80s movie mix-up.
We shook hands on a lightning storm.
Yeah, we were both peeing into a fountain at the same time. Now we switched lives.
You talk about some of your early work. You were in a production of Bye Bye Birdie.
Yes, I was.
What age were you here?
This was in eighth grade.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah.
And what role did you play?
Well, I was originally going to be in the chorus with two friends of mine who were like, just come hang out and do this thing. I had no interest in acting. And I write all about this in the book. I wound up in this weird situation where I was very much like a nerd with OCD. You've known me a long time.
Yes.
I have some mental issues. OCD is one of them. I memorized the entire play. And then Danny Tolbia was playing Conrad Birdie. Now, if you know this show, you know Conrad Birdie is Elvis. He's supposed to be Elvis,
right.
The coolest person on earth. Everyone in the whole play. Conrad Birdie's coming. Conrad Birdie's on his way. He's so cool. That's amazing. He quit. Danny Tolbia, who's still to this day, very cool guy. I'm Facebook friends with him. He quit. He's like, I don't want to do this. So the director was like, well, you have it memorized. I guess you got to be Conrad Birdie now. And I was not Conrad, like Danny Tolbia, it made sense. I was like a prepubescent child, and they made me play this Elvis-like, God-like man that everyone worships and loves.
And let me just say, in one of the great, I'm just so happy about this. There's video.
Yeah, I brought video.
And I will say, the great thing about the video is you can tell the audience agrees with your assessment.
Yeah.
That this is not who they were expecting for Conrad Birdie.
There was not much. The audience did not have warnings. So you just hear, I think, a lot of the dads in the audience just go like, oh, hell yeah. Like, they feel something really abnormal is happening right away.
Let's take a look at Chris as Conrad Birdie. Lest people think this was a non-singing role, roll the tape.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I feel like had your scene partner, that young girl, stood up, she would have towered over you.
Oh, at least a foot taller. Yeah. Also, that choreography, just watching back now, inappropriate for atheists.
Very inappropriate.
Yeah, yeah. Not okay.
You did it like someone who had your doubts that it was okay.
Yes. As you know, that has been my attitude for the rest of my career as well.
You had a fabulous show that I was lucky enough to be a guest on a couple times called The Chris Gethard Show.
Thank you for being a part of it.
It was so unique. It was so inventive. It was so cool. You write during this book that you think the show might get canceled.
Yeah.
And then it does.
Yeah, I was working on this book about the positivity of failure and how failure can be your friend. And then I was like, I think I'm about to suffer a massive public failure. It was not the easiest thing, but it proves that I walked the walk. Like, this book, you can tell it's not BS, because I did go out and fail publicly right before it was published. And, I thought about it. I thank you for being on it so many times. And it's interesting. This book helped me get through that experience. And I am lucky, because that show meant the world to me. It meant a lot to I've never had the most fans, but I think I have some of the best fans.
Yes.
Between my TV show, my podcast, just such kind, empathetic people. And I think, like I say in this book, I think they'd rather see me fail the right way than just be desperate and let the show turn into something bad. And I didn't want to get, like, yelled at about it anymore either. Like, we would have these notes calls, which were warranted. Our show was not doing well.
Ratings-wise?
Like, numbers-wise, bad.
What were the ratings in terms of the other shows?
We were the worst show on True TV.
Okay.
We were told we were the lowest-rated show on True TV, which I am psyched about. I am, because I'm a big fan of failure, as I say in this book. And who wants to be the third worst show on True TV? If you're going to be if you're in the bottom half, go to the basement with my book, baby. Go to the basement with my book.
Well, the show was, despite the failure, was an incredible success, and I hope you know that, as is the book. And as is everything else you're doing, it's always such a pleasure to see you. Give it up for Chris Gethard, everybody.
Thank you, sir.
Lose Well, available now.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Chris Gethard.
Hi.
Chris. In this book, you write a lot about failure and losing and like seeing the opportunity in failure. But you also have had these amazing successes. You've got popular podcast. You're married. You know, you're doing these shows, your HBO special. But you said that when you like get having these successes, you still like to feel grounded. So physically, you like to get beat up. And currently, you're doing jujitsu classes as recent as last night.
This morning. Actually, this morning. I went back again this morning.
No way.
Yeah. I write in the book about how one of the things I've just come to believe is that I feel like you see people getting complacent. You see people who get good at something and then they get complacent with it. And I have this like motto for myself, which is that I always want to be a little bit terrified. You know, I always want to feel like I'm in the middle of an uphill battle. And sometimes with comedy, I feel like I'm actually okay at it. I've been doing it for 18 years. So I, to make sure that I still have this sense of terror in my life, I go and I do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu at a very weird gym in Brooklyn called Boncho MMA. It's in the basement of a warehouse. And I fight people, and they beat me up, and it's a real cast of characters. One of them is a very nice but violent Ukrainian man named Roman. There's a 17-year-old boy named Omar who just beats me up bad. The black belts, one of the black belts, like, he never stops talking, and the other guy is like a world champion-level guy who's like always on the verge of an anxiety attack. It's a real weird environment. But I'm entering a tournament soon as well.
Well, tell us about the tournament.
It's on November 17th. It's called Grappling Industries. I'm going to enter the 145-pound Masters division. Master sounds like you're really good at it. It doesn't. It means you're over the age of 30. It's the it's the older man division. And I'm going to go. I'll have four matches. I anticipate that I'll lose them all. But I'm going to go see what happens. Because like I say, failure is your friend. You gotta find ways to fail.
Yeah. What happens in a match?
So so I do no gi jujitsu. So I don't wear that traditional outfit. I wear a spandex shirt and shorts. So in a match, you'd go out, you kind of slap the other guy's hand, and then you're trying to take each other down violently. There's no kicking and punching in jujitsu. You're trying to choke the other person unconscious or break one of their limbs. So it's like wrestling with submission holds.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not smart that I do this, but I feel like it's a very necessary thing in my life.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear your reasoning behind why you feel like you need to go do it. It's really impressive.
Well, I just feel like, especially as an artist, you know what I mean? It's like you see people who, like I said, just like, you know, in the improv world, I'm not talking bad. I'm not trying to talk bad about my peers, but sometimes you turn around and you're like, oh, that person's been doing this forever, and it's too easy for him, they're not growing, and you're going to naturally hit a ceiling at certain things. And I always feel like, man, if you don't at least have that feeling in your life that used to motivate you, that used to make you kind of like go into attack mode and try to make things happen, like how will you ever grow anymore? You know, and if that's not coming through your art itself, I feel like you got to find it in those other areas just to keep those muscles strong, right. You know, that motivation.
Well, you talk in the book about getting kind of complacent and familiar with improv and then kind of transitioning and doing more stand-up.
Yeah, yeah.
You have a story in the book that I really, really loved about, I mean, every stand-up has a story about a heckler.
Yeah.
You did something very unique with a heckler that was so impressive to me.
Thank you. Yeah, you're referring... There's a chapter where I talk a lot about how, like, if you're pursuing any field, you got to know the rules, but you also have to be ready to break them if that's the most productive option and treat them like red lights, meaning, like, you could hit the gas if you want. You'll probably just crash, but maybe you won't. Like, it is, at the end of the day, still an option, a highly advisable option, but an option you can break. And yeah, I had this heckler one night who, it was at a show in a bar. It was like partial seated, partial standing. He was standing maybe 5 feet from the stage off to the side. And he was a large guy. He was like he's probably around 6'2", 6'4". And he was eating French onion soup, like really slurping it and twirling the cheese. and kept mumbling stuff through the whole show. And I was going up last. I was about to tape a half hour special for Comedy Central. And it was the last time I was going to be able to run it. And everybody was so mad at this guy, and I was headlining that night, so there's a little bit of like a code of honor in the stand-up world of like, somebody's got to hand it to this guy, like hand him his ass, and nobody's done it, so I kind of have to do it. And he kept saying the words, bust a nut, while I was trying to tell a story. He just kept going, bust a nut, bust a nut. Long story short, I got into it with him. He revealed to me that he was a comic. He's like, I'm a comic. I'm funnier than you. That's why I can heckle you. And I just, in my head, I was like, you know what? This is not a good idea. This breaks the rules. But I was just like, all right, here's the microphone. And he was like, what? And I was like, take the microphone. Like, if you're really funnier than me, take the microphone, get on stage. I'll stand where you are. If you're better than I am, no one will be mad. The crowd will get a better show. I'll learn something. Like, and I'm genuine about that. If you're funnier than me, I'll happily sit back and try to figure out what you have that I don't. But I'm just warning you, if you're not funnier than me, after the way you've behaved all night, this crowd, it's going to be unlike anything. It's going to be bad for you. And he knew it was, it was like checkmate, because it's like he can either leave and get totally booed for being cowardly about it after all this, or he can get on stage. So he got on stage and he mumbled his way through one setup and then couldn't remember the punchline. And that crowd, it was like, you know, like when you see like footage from like a like undersea documentary and you'll see like a giant pool of predator fish just like descend upon one piece of prey. Like that's how the crowd treated him. It was instant and very gratifying for me.
Yeah. One of my favorite details about that story is the specificity of French onion soup. Yeah. That all soup during a stand-up show is bad, but French onions especially tricky.
I challenge anyone to tell me a more disruptive type of soup.
It's a disruptive type of soup when you're just at like dinner.
Yeah, yeah. It smells pretty pungent. It's good. It's one of those foods. It's like good to taste, but the smell is pretty pungent for those around you. Mm-hmm. The cheese is really a whole issue.
It's long. It stretches long. For a while.
It's got a real slurp factor. And then it's got that weird like bready, oniony mix that's like that slimy mix that, again, tastes good, but visually just looks horrible. Like everything about it is unappealing, except for the person who's actually eating it. And at that point, I'll admit it's pretty good soup.
Yeah.
But as far as something to use to really shake up the flow of a comedy set, It was a pretty potent weapon.
Yeah. Last question I wanted to ask you, again, in terms of writing this book, there are these really funny stories, you know, about different failures you've had. But of course, these were not very funny in the moment.
Yeah.
What was it like revisiting all these moments in your life for this book?
It was pretty fun and pretty cathartic, because I would just say over and over in my career, you know, you suffer failures, you suffer defeats, personal and professional. And I think this is true in my personal and professional life. When I try to like hide them, try to stuff them down, try to just move on, they always eat at me a little bit, shake my confidence, mess with the ego, mess with the self-esteem. I have always found that when you own things publicly, not only does it give you a little bit of power over them, but the other people who have experienced similar things, I think, really identify with that. I feel like I've built a whole career on going like, here are some really painful things from life. Here are some flaws I have. Here are some things that I don't know how to handle well. And a lot of my fan base turns out to be people who go, me too. Like, you know, my HBO special, a lot of my fans are people like, we've also tried to kill ourselves, which is a weird thing to say as a comedian. And I know I'm being a little bit facetious, but it's also true. So to me, it just feels like owning the dark stuff, owning the failures, owning the flaws is really, to me, the only path I see that can turn them from deficits into assets. So I'm a really big proponent of it.
Well, I'm 100% earnest when I say that. I've just been so impressed with your body of work. What you've done is so helpful and exciting and funny and great.
Thank you.
And different and unique and weird. And I'm just so excited to see what you do.
Thank
next.
You
Congrats
for throwing funny into the middle, because that I'm often insecure about that part.
Well, if you listen to your interview with Seth, I mean, you killed. Like,
it was
fun.
It was
so funny.
But I think here's an insecurity I have that I'm trying to figure out is I think if you live in New York where I perform live a lot, I think I'm funnier than anyone who has watched any of my bigger platform projects would ever know. I think people in New
York.
That's
really interesting.
I think people have seen me in shows in Brooklyn and at clubs in Manhattan are like, oh, that dude's funny. And I think people who watch my TV show are like, that guy's weird. Or my HBO special are like, that guy's sad. My podcasts are like, oh, that guy's pretty serious. I got to put something, this book, oh, this guy really has some good advice, but I want to put something out into the world at some point where people are like, funny guy.
Yeah.
Because who else has a career that's gone this long as a comedian that hasn't nailed that one yet? That's not good.
Well,
that's my biggest insecurity.
I have seen you perform many times at UCB, and I've seen you do stand-up, and it's just pure funny, pure jokes. But I guess
but you wouldn't know that. You wouldn't know that from anything I've put out into the world. You'd think it always was.
All right, well, the next thing is just going to be pure jokes.
I'll find a way to muck it up with some sort of extra layer that nobody wants. I'll find a way.
I'm looking forward to it.
Anyway, you were trying to wrap it up, and I injected a big fat dose of my own insecurity into it. Sorry about that.
No, it's good. It's good. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.